Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again here on Circles of Change. You know, people often ask me, Zara, how in the world do you get connected with all these guests? And I often comment that it's nobody's safe if I can overhear a conversation or I sit next to them on the phone or on the airplane. But when someone also who I know for a long time sends me, my new book is about to be published, guarantee I place that call pretty quick. So thus is the circumstances that bring me together with someone I've known for over 25 years. A real pleasure, David Zenoff, based in San Francisco today. How are you this morning, David?
Good morning, Zara. Oh, I'm fine, thank you. I'm glad to talk to you.
You bet. And let me be very clear to our listeners that David was one of my professors when I was in business school, so he's known me since I was a professional kid. And still trying to be a kid, I think.
Well, that makes me an old man by now.
No. That means that we're both trying to regain and recoup and stay where we are. Let me introduce David. He has advised more than 90 organizations in over 30 countries in the past 45 years, companies that have ranged from major multinationals to startups and several types of not-for-profit organizations. Working primarily with senior executives and boards of directors, he focuses on organizational renewal and development, initiating major changes, and also strategy formulation. David's expertise includes assessing leadership and management practices, culture, employee morale, and then addressing the barriers to performance, anything from administrative processes to internal communication patterns and effectiveness. And for our frequent listeners, they probably are sitting there saying, ah, this is the person Zara has been trying to grow up to be like. Indeed. Early in her career, David taught at the Stanford Graduate Business School, as I mentioned, where we met, also Columbia and IMD in Switzerland. He's a research assistant for the Harvard Business School in the Philippines in his earlier days as well. He received his BA degree at Stanford University, MBA and Doctor of Business Administration at Harvard University. David has also served on the board of directors of three U.S. public companies and was a board member and chair of Larkin Street Youth Services, which is a San Francisco not-for-profit that helps homeless and at-risk youth. He also has provided gratis consultation for Mercy's Beyond Borders, the Mercy Housing in California, and San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. The author of 9 books, David divides his time between San Francisco, his principal home, and Switzerland and various international destinations. He's a devoted husband to his wife, Janet, father, grandfather, friend, mentor, that's me in the list there as a protege, and also an avid hiker, Stanford sports fan, and former marathon runner. So our topic today, his 9th book is The Soul of the Organization, How to Ignite Employee Engagement and Productivity at Every Level. And since it's copyright 2013, I think I'm first on the line here to get you, am I?
You are indeed.
Oh, how wonderful. Terrific. Lead the fleet, as we love to do.
I haven't even seen a copy of the book. It's out, though.
I love that. Okay. Well, we're not going to keep you in the dark. You know, David, what struck me as I read your book, and I just fell into it head over heels, The Soul of the Organization, is that even your decision to what to name this body of work was something that had to manifest at the same time you were writing it.
Yeah. As you mentioned, I've seen lots and lots and lots of organizations over a long period of time, and some of them I've worked with and observed for long periods mm-hmm. of time themselves. And I've always been really fascinated by how come in some organizations people love working there and are turned on for long periods of time mm-hmm. and the organizations do really well, and how come most of the other organizations that's not true. And I've been trying to put my finger on what is the difference between those who really have something brilliant going and those who are, like most of humanity, not quite that good. And it struck me in thinking about it for a long time and then going out and doing some research that there's some kind of a force, a unifying quality, some kind of a core integrity that when I read other fields is called a soul, the soul mm-hmm. of a person or soul of a society or whatever. And So that is how that word came into my awareness, and then I started pursuing that to see if that, in fact, was a good descriptor of what I had come up with.
Yeah, and indeed, you even mentioned the fact you also were playing simultaneously that word of hope. You know, hope and soul, which combined together always propels the best out of us.
I had an awakening about 15 years ago that my life's purpose was to bring hope to other people. And so that's always been, since that awareness, a guide for me in terms of what I do and how I try to do it.
And heaven only knows, for those of us that are at the, you know, epicenter or on the fringe, wherever in an organization, both for-profit and not-for-profit, that the day-in, day-out challenge, in absence of having that hope and belief, but also, you know, being backed up by this extra energy, you call it, it's almost like magic pixie dust called soul, that keeps us wedded together.
Yes, absolutely. And just apropos, most of us who work have lots of struggle associated with our careers and finding employment and keeping it and being fulfilled, finding meaning. So trying to give people of all kinds in all roles in all parts of the world a sense of there can be hope for fulfillment and meaning and satisfaction and challenge in work and in organization work is really important to me to try to make my contribution to that.
And particularly at a time like this, when all the research, whether it be Blessing White or the Gallup polls that show so many people are completely disconnected from what they're otherwise routinely doing day in and day out to try to make ends meet.
Yeah, I mean, just to go on with what you were so wisely saying, and from those studies you were citing and others that we both would be aware of, a shockingly high percentage of employees in organizations of all kinds are found to be disengaged or only minimally engaged in the workplace. And what a great shame for the individual and what a great shame for the overall organization, their colleagues, their stakeholders. I mean, it needs to be better for everybody's benefit. And the question is, how can that happen?
That's right. And so on the cover of David's new book, by the way, The Soul of the Organization, and you can find more information, by the way, on a website with that name, souloftheorganization.com, that you've got a book of matches that are not yet lit and there's a flame coming up to them. And this whole thought then of how do we ignite employees, those people that are disenfranchised or on the fringe, or perhaps they were on the field, but now they sit in the bleachers, how to get them back all together playing. And this whole concept then of what is the soul. And so you specifically talk about 11 organizations. Walk us through some of those things that you would define as the critical ingredients for soul.
So I wanted the organizations to illustrate everything I said and that I had come up with this notion of soul. I can't prove, and these organizations can't prove anything. You've got to believe that having been out in the world for a very long time doing what I've been doing, that my hunches are probably good ones, and so I went out to show through these organizations. I took four not-for-profit organizations. Two are universities, Stanford and Notre Dame, both excellent in their own realms. I took a organization here in San Francisco that helps homeless kids that has been doing it for 27 years and is really good at transforming the possibilities for kids who are down and out. Mm-hmm. Because life has dealt them such a bad start to their lives. And I took the Sisters of Mercy, which is an order of nuns that started in Ireland in the 1850s and has now moved around the world, and they help poor people. And I'm not a Catholic. I'd never met a nun before, so I don't start off with an orientation to the works and the good works of such organizations. I just had a general awareness, but I study them because they are so effective. And then I took San Francisco International Airport, because it's one of our country's most respected ones, and as an example, because there we have a public sector enterprise. And then I took some business firms that I was very aware of through professional orientation and experience. Wells Fargo Bank, which is one of the highest performing, if not the highest performing bank in the United States, almost year after year for very long periods of time, and where the employees really like it very much. And I took Williams-Sonoma, the specialty retailer that is so beloved by both the people who work there and by the customers who shop there at their Williams-Sonoma stores for kitchen and the Pottery Barn in the West Elm. And I took Levi Strauss, which has been around since the Gold Rush times, where the employees really like it, and which has done very well and been a leading company. I took a couple financial service companies besides Wells Fargo that are investment management, because that is such an industry that has its ups and downs. It is fraught with suspicions about do they really care about their customers. And I took Merrill Lynch Private Bank, Private Client Group, the brokerage part, which has been the largest in the United States, and for a very long time did it really well, both in business and whose employees loved it. And I took Dodge & Cox, which is an investment manager for individuals and institutions, which is not so well known, but it's one of the best and biggest in the United States. And finally, Barclays Global Investors, which is has been the world's largest investment manager. So each of those I looked into. I knew in advance that the employees really were turned on there for different reasons. And I tried to use them as illustrations of the five elements of soul that I have come up with. And do you want me to say what I think they are?
Let me just real quick, though. Okay. I want to understand, though, the word the soul of the organization. I notice it's not souls with an S. So part of what you're revealing here is not just that each individual has souls and brings what they bring, but that collectively together, the integration of the sum, the sum of the parts is much bigger than had we just, added them all together individually.
Yes, it is. I'm not dealing with the souls of individuals. So,
right.
However that is related, is not what I'm focused on, and I wouldn't claim to have great insight into that. I might, but I'm not aware.
But I would say, though, that this is a manifestation of how, to your premise, that how you're igniting the individual's commitment to their company, that it's kind of a multiplier effect. The first ingredient you talked about is that by and large, these 11 organizations all manifested a real concern for the group of people that they were then servicing, first and foremost.
That, and think of the passion that can ignite, to use that word again, in a group of people working in an organization. If they really have a concern for someone or some group of people or something out there in the world that they really care about and feel bad about or want to see somehow that their problems are resolved. I mean, we see in nonprofit organizations when people who volunteer there or who are professionals are turned on by the, and so passionate because of their concern. And for me, that's the first element of soul of a nonprofit or a business organization.
Same way, yeah, because you can get wrapped around that. I mean, I read your book and I kept seeing my days of being on the Corvette program just jumping out at me every other page, because that organization within a larger company had so much soul and commitment to everything that the passion around a nice red sports car could possibly bring, let alone for those of us that got paid for working on that project.
It must have felt good then to be a part of that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I turned down a promotion twice to leave the group. I didn't want to leave. And that's the kind of engagement, I know you would see the kind of a real commitment and part and parcel in your day out and your joy of your day.
Yes. And then the second element of soul that I found that these organizations share is that they make a commitment or they have a quest to go do something about what their concerns are. So
right.
In the nonprofit example, just for to use that as an illustration, Larkin Street Youth Services, there's a huge concern for homeless youth who are out in the streets of San Francisco. The element of soul, the second element is, let's do something. Let's help the kids transform their lives. Let's get them off the street so and into a whole new adult life possibility. So it's a determination and quest. As you and I both know, and anybody who might be listening, if you make a determination, it sets in motion what the best you can do and the resources you can harness to go after the problem or the goal that you've got in mind and try to make something happen.
And most certainly, of course, your years of working as a consultant has been to help companies get very, very clear on those quests.
That's
and not stray from it, and then back up the strategies and the execution plan to go make things happen. Your third point then, though, is you also have to know how you got to do what you got to do, right? So you have to have these fundamental understandings.
Yes, and that was quite interesting to me as I was trying to understand myself what I was seeing among these organizations that have the qualities that I so much admire and I think the world does. And what I discerned was that these organizations have some what we might call them proprietary understandings that can that help them be able to go after trying to meet the concerns that they share as people in the organization and the quest they've decided and the commitment to go after and solve them. And just to give an example or two, so I'm not being too abstract, we all know about Apple and we read about Apple and so forth and admire what we have to admire there. One of the understandings Apple has, I mean, there are many of them, of course, is how to design retail stores.
Oh, yeah.
Where people love to go in and love to do what they do and love to buy the products and get help, etc. That's an understanding that Apple has that nobody in the whole world can replicate at all. I mean, people try, but, you know, they so outperform as a retailer, anybody in the whole world. That would be an example of a proprietary understanding.
To the point that people have play dates at the Apple Store.
Kids
that go there. Oh yeah, it's like a playground for certainly the digital natives, not maybe us immigrants. We go there to try to figure out how to turn the thing on right. But yeah.
I still haven't learned.
That's what I know. We'll keep that one quiet. I agree. So you start number one was the concerns of the group. Number two was a quest. Number three is understanding. And number four, though, back that up with, as you wrote, core philosophies and beliefs.
Yeah, philosophies and beliefs about how are we going to do things in this organization and how are we going to treat each other and how are we going to treat our clients or customers and how are we going to approach work. What's really important around here is a group of people working together. And there, not surprisingly, there's a wide variety of kinds of philosophies and beliefs that organizations, including the ones I study, have because they're different groups of people. But just so it's not abstract again, at Dodge & Cox, which I said is a investment management firm, one of their philosophies and beliefs is to involve large numbers of employees in all decisions which are made, and that to take decisions very slowly and get lots and lots of inputs and think about it and discuss it before they make an investment decision of any type, you know, to buy a stock or to do whatever they're going to do. And so that is an example of a philosophy belief that they have developed over a long period of time and that they believe it works for them. Another one, just to take a different example in the financial service industry, Wells Fargo Bank believes that its employees are its single most important stakeholder.
Right, right.
And, you know, we hear a lot of organizations in business or nonprofits say it's the clients we serve or the customers we serve the most important, not at Wells Fargo. And so there's a whole belief system that goes around with that and implications that senior management believes follow from that kind of a philosophy belief.
Absolutely. You're right. Then the fifth ingredient to the constitution of this soul is the power of stories.
Well, yes. It was just wonderfully warming to hear each of these organizations that I use as examples tell me, as the outsider who is interested, about all the stories they tell each other as employees of these organizations, how their organization was founded and why, the kinds of struggles that huge moments in its evolution. They went through to survive and or to flourish and or to gain notoriety, whatever the story might have been about. How various individual employees did outstanding kinds of work or achievements or were courageous or insightful and were able to save the day or serve better, whatever the story is about. And by telling those stories back and forth over and over at any kind of meetings or forums, it re-inspired everybody. The people who had been there for a long time, as well as the newcomers to the organization.
You bet. And in fact, yeah, I know because you've played this role of coming in as an outsider to help companies change, one of the first places you go is try to collect as much respect and regard for the history of the enterprise.
You're right.
Also, by the way, that can be some of your biggest challenges if you start poking at things that upend the stories. Yeah, you're not very popular over a short period of time, are you?
You found that, have you?
Oh, indeed, yes. I've also probably had to turn in a badge every now and then for not having been sensitive to it. We learn by our mistakes in the process.
Don't we all?
Yes. Well, David, this idea of soul, is there a bit of a chicken before the egg here? In other words, do organizations really meld around and mesh on soul by doing things? And yet the flip is, to be able to do things, they have to have had that soul in the first place?
Well, I think it's the chicken and the egg, you know, has been a great challenge for anybody to think about. I don't think I have any greater insight than anybody else about it. So it's a really good question to ask. The best I can say is this, is that in studying these organizations, somewhere in each of their early histories, I don't think necessarily in day one, but I'm guessing in the first couple years, as the organization gelled and began to get some momentum and had a basis for survival, it clarified for itself what was really important and what the people were doing. Why are we doing this, after all? And what I would call their soul or their elements of soul began to gel and clarify. By the way, Zara, nobody I talk to used the word soul.
Yeah, so
that's really important. I'm using that as the outside observer to try to crystallize the essence of what I think is important here.
That's wonderful. Well, it's been a real pleasure. Our guest at this particular time has been David Zenoff. His book, The Soul of the Organization, How to Ignite Employee Engagement and Productivity at Every Level. David's going to be fun to watch this then get launched officially in 2013. It's been a pleasure to host you here today. One quick question that's always a zinger, of course, is how do you think you've changed the most by helping others change?
Over my whole life?
Yeah.
I feel very fulfilled every time that I am able to help a group of people do something so that they get more satisfaction or more meaning. I increasingly feel good about it and, feel pleased with what I'm doing and how I'm spending my life's energies and wit. So I don't know if that's changed, but I'm aware now at a more advanced age that that is really important.
Well, and I also like how you close your final chapter, Hope for Organizational Souls, and that you also close by saying the kind of things that made a difference for you that really helps you move forward is also say, sing every day, eat chocolate for breakfast, stand on your head, and affirm yourself. So thank you very much for sharing that. We'll be in touch. Happiest of holidays.
Thanks, Lara. Best wishes
to
you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.